Welcome to GeoTalk, the podcast for geocaches down under. In this episode of GeoTalk, we speak to the Prez from Dubbo, and I catch up with Adakesh from Melbourne to learn a little bit more about geocoins. All this and more on GeoTalk. Well, welcome to the eighth episode of GeoTalk. It's been a topsy-turvy kind of fortnight for me. I started off in a blaze of glory, travelling around North Sydney, finding some fantastic geocaches. And I might give you a link to one of them in particular that's quite well worth doing if you head over to the Harbour City. But then the rest of the past 2 weeks, I've sort of been laying back and not doing too much. One of the things I did finish in the last 2 weeks was the Geocaching Australia newsletter, issue 5. And if you want to get some background material on some of the things in geocaching down under in a printed form, you can check out the link that I put on the website. One of the other reasons why I haven't been doing too much geocaching in the last 2 weeks is that I'm heading down to the South Coast and then into the Blue Mountains. So I figured I'd get geared up for that. And in the Blue Mountains trip, we'll be taking some more video. So if you enjoyed the GeoTalk video edition 1, or you haven't checked it out, check it out. There'll be more of them coming up in the near future. And hopefully we'll speak to a few geocaches on the South Coast around the Wollongong Illawarra area in the next few weeks as well. Thanks to everyone for all the emails and feedback over the last 2 weeks. There's been quite a bit, and I'll go through it towards the end of the show, and some great ideas for future podcasts. And one of the other things that I'd like to explore in the next few episodes is waymarking. I discovered it a few months ago, actually was sent an email back when it first started, but it's slowly starting to take off in Australia, and I know a few geocaches have been putting waymarks around the country. So if anyone's interested in providing some material or having an interview about that, give us a yell. Now, rather than the GeoTalk quiz, which I put a question at the start of this show, in this episode, I'm going to give you something a little bit different. So you can either wait until we get to the bit about the Olympic Park podcache, or you can skip around about to the 21-minute mark, somewhere around there, and have a bit of a go at the challenge that I'm going to set for you. Anyway, that's enough of me rambling on. It's time for a Geocacher profile. Okay, I'm sitting here in the middle of a crater out near Dubbo and sitting watching an amazing astronomical display. We've got Venus, the Moon and Comet McNaught, and I'm joined by the President, part of President and the First Lady. How are you going?
I'm going very well, thank you.
It's a magical sight, isn't it?
It is absolutely amazing out here. This is pitch black around, this perfect oval around us, not a person within Kui, and we're watching this great astronomical event as well.
Well, one of the reasons why we're here is to chat to you and find out a bit more about your background in geocaching. So, first of all, how did you find out about geocaching?
Quite strangely, I turned up for a new position at a school. I'd just been appointed their deputy principal. I was sitting next to the Bronze, who I only knew was Steve Williams at that stage, who was the Year 11 coordinator. And he got chatting, g'day, how are you, what's your name? I know, what did you do on the weekend? I said, oh, I went bushwalking. Oh, where'd you go? Oh, I went for a bushwalk in the Goobang National Park. And he looked at me very strangely and went, where in the Goobang National Park? I went, oh, the north side. I was trying to walk to the Trig, but it was stinking hot, I only got a part of the way. He went, oh, I was at the Trig. I was with Ben Wheatley, who ended up turning out to be Mix, and they were putting out Go Harvey. They said, oh, well, we went to the Trig and then we went out the south, and I'd been to the north. I went, oh, okay. I said, well, what were you doing there? He said, oh, well, it's hard to explain. I was doing a thing called geocaching. We were putting out a cache. I went, oh, so what's that? He said, well, it's pretty hard to explain, but I'll talk to you later. So at lunch that day, Mix and the Bronze come over and had a bit more of a chat. That sounded really interesting. So I went home and spoke to the wife about these two strange people I'd met at school with this strange hobby called geocaching. The next day, at lunchtime, the Bronze comes into the office. He's carrying a yellow Etrex and an instruction book. and he's got this whole folder of pages. And first he said, now the first one's called Follow the Arrow. All the instructions are on the page. Here's your GPS. Now this is what you do. Well, I've actually put into the GPS, you know, the coordinates for all the pages. So all you got to do is flick through. He said, "Good luck." So that afternoon, I went home and spoke to Jennifer and thought, I've just been given all this stuff, you know. Here's his GPS. GPS, okay. This looks interesting. So we got in the car and started to follow the arrow. And we've gone down and we found this biscuit tin. I opened it up and thought, oh, okay. Gee, strange people name these things. We need a name here. So we thought, well, being surname White, we always say we live in the White House, we'll become President and First Lady. So that's how it happened. That case number one in February 2005. So we've been doing it just over almost 2 years now.
And in that time, has geocaching taken you beyond just Dubbo?
Absolutely. We've done caches way up in Queensland. We went up to Queensland last Easter and had a great time up there. We just put on the GCA forum that we were turning up for a visit. We got a message back from Wingat, and he organised a morning tea for us at the coffee shop in the Gap. We had people like the IF, the Hormerfords turned up, the Nosographs, VW Nuts and his mum, and we actually went with someone to find their first cache, so they had a new cacher there. So yeah, we've cached in Queensland, been to the ACT, done a lot in Sydney, and we've met some really great people, and that's what's good about geocaching. You meet all these wonderful people.
Also, have you found that you've been exploring the country a lot more than you would have?
Absolutely. We've found some of the best places, and I think the thing that really pushed us the most was the Fleet to Federation event. That was really good, where we had to really challenge ourselves, where we were in our comfort zone of doing the 1-1s and the 2-1s and the 2-2s, and when we had to go and do, you know, the equal, the 8, and we went and did geocache down at Grenfell, and we went for some big walks, and we ended up doing, you know, caches that we would just thought impossible, like Terra Cache. And
I should point out, because not many people, well, maybe a lot of people do, but particularly outside of Australia, wouldn't know what the Fleet to Federation was. Can you explain what that game was?
Yeah, it was you had to complete 25 of 30 different cache types, including setting a cache, and you had to, you know, there was two ways of doing it: get as many points as you can or get as few points as you can. We decided to really push ourselves and do the hard thing, and we were really impressed. We set our sights, we would have been happy with 200 points. We thought that would have been a reasonable thing. If we finished inside the top half, we were going to be really happy. We ended up, I think we got 225 points and finished 14th. So it was really great. It was a great event, and it was good that it was nationwide, because you could do caches. You know, some caches actually went interstate to get points.
Yeah, excellent. Okay, now you've mentioned that you enjoy the aspect of being challenged in geocaches. What's been the most challenging one for you?
The most challenging geocache would have been Terra Cache, where we had to go into the Narang National Park and actually climb up this rock face and then get into a cave and find it through there. And very few people had done it. And it was set at a 4.5, 3.5. And it was really tough. But I suppose our biggest challenge was doing Buckley's and completing Buckley's, which was a 5.5. And over two solid days, finding the impossible and having Bronze and Mix there who had set it, and they weren't giving anything away. They let us make mistakes and go off track and really push ourselves. And to actually do a 5.5, I think that was the best experience. To actually camp out, do a couple of really hard, solid days, and then complete something that only one person had done before.
Now, caching in Dubbo presents a few challenges, and just in the short day or weekend that I've spent here, I've seemed to notice a few of those. I mean, obviously, you don't have the number of geocaches hidden that you would in a major capital city. So, can you go through some of the I suppose not problems, but difficulties you have in having a smaller geocaching community in an almost remote area?
I think the big problem is that you have limited points of interest, and I suppose the beauty of Dubbo is that all the caches are quite quality areas, so we don't just cache for cache's sake and just do the drive-bys and things like that. The caches are placed now that really, really people, you know, can have a good time. There's the 1-1s, you know, in the drive-bys, but you can really do the quite challenging multis as well. And I think the beauty of Dubbo is we have good quality variety of different cache types.
And finally, Dubbo is getting itself a bit of a reputation for holding an annual event. Their plans in 2007 again for the Queen's Birthday weekend?
Absolutely. We're actually going to talk about that tonight. So I'm hoping that it's a mystery multi-event. But we've had some really good ones. The last couple at the Gold Rush, and then the Scooby-Doo event, last year was really good. We get caches from right around Australia coming. Cached comes over from South Australia, and she has the best time. And we've had caches down from Queensland and from Victoria and the ACT and from Sydney, and of course Pesky and the boys turn up from the Central Coast, and we really enjoy having them. We're just hoping the weather gets a bit better, because the last two we've had really cold, biting rain. So we're hoping for a really mild event this year with lots of sun and something a bit different.
Well, good luck with it, and it's been great speaking to you, and I think we better go back to enjoying the comet. All the best, President.
Okay, thanks very much.
Hello, GeoTalk listeners. This is Daryl W. Ford with Firefly 03 of the new Cachemaniacs podcast. Our show features candid, uncut, and irregular interviews with geocachers.
Since we're stuck here in the Midwest United States, we could really use your help. If you know anyone that might make an interesting interview for the show, drop us an email at cachemaniacs@gmail.com. Perhaps it's even yourself.
We've already recorded some great interviews, and you can download some of them right now. You can find our show at cachemaniacs.com.
I'm joined from Melbourne by Darren, also known as Adakesh. Welcome to the show.
How are you today?
Very good. Yourself?
Not too bad.
Now, we're going to talk about geocoins, but before we do, give us a little bit of background about how you got into geocaching and when you started and what you've been up to.
Well, I started back in 2004 when a friend of mine known as Cached, or Sam, came to visit me, and first thing she did when she arrived at my house was pull out her GPS to see where the nearest cache was. Had no idea what a cache was, but at the time she told me that the nearest one was a little bit over 200 metres, which absolutely blew me away. So we went down and we picked up that cache, and then over the next 2 days we proceeded to pick up about another dozen. And after that I was absolutely hooked. I borrowed a GPS for about a week, and then had permission from the Minister of War and Finance, my wife, to buy my own GPS.
You've been doing it since then. You've actually moved around the country a bit, so you've seen caches around Australia, haven't you?
I've visited every state in Australia except Tasmania, and cached in all of them. My work for a while there took me out all over Australia doing teaching, and at night times I would go out and cache as something to do. So I find caching is a way of getting around and seeing parts of the country that I wouldn't normally get to myself.
Now, soon after you got into caching, you went overseas to do a stint in the Middle East, is that correct?
That's right. I'm a military, so I did 6 months in Iraq. And while I was there, I also did a bit of caching. I believe I ended up picking up 7 caches from Iraq itself, which was rather interesting.
And that leads us into geocoins, because this is when you first discovered all about them, and you can sort of help us discover what the military link is between geocoins.
Yeah, well, in the military, American military, they use a system called military challenge coins. This was started by the Special Forces within the American military, where each member of the unit was issued with a coin from that unit. The idea being it builds camaraderie, and anyone could throw a coin down at any time, and anyone who couldn't match that coin had to buy the beers. So it was a way of releasing a bit of tension, I suppose, and just creating a little bit of camaraderie between the troops. It's now gone extremely large in a lot of militaries around the world, and most countries have their own form of a military challenge coin. I actually got involved because I created an Australian challenge coin for the troops that I was stationed with in Iraq. So I got fairly involved in how to actually build them and where to get them done.
So did you help the boys in Australia from Australia because they were all getting sick of buying beers for the Americans?
A little bit of that, yes. and it's also, I actually created coins as a thank you because the Americans, having that system, really love their coins. So Australians were giving them away as thank you gifts to people that helped us out. So any time that anyone did a good job for us or, you know, got us out of a bind, shake their hand and give them a coin and they just lit up. They absolutely loved it. So that was worth it, if nothing else.
So do you have a collection of military coins from Iraq?
I've actually got about 80 coins that I picked up while I was in Iraq, plus a few that I've picked up from around the world.
Tell us about putting together the Australian GeoCoin, because it wasn't as simple as saying, here's a coin and here's the design and who wants one, was it?
No. I wanted to make sure that I wasn't upsetting anybody. So the coin got designed initially by me, but I put it out to the community via the forum and accepted all replies. Everyone was taken seriously, everything was taken on board, and it went through about 12 different versions before we settled on a coin that the minimum amount of people were upset with.
Now, I must say, it's a beautiful design, because whenever I get to a case, and I think I've found two in the wild now, and they do stand out, they're quite nice. How many of them did you end up printing?
We ended up having 600 trackable coins made, and there were also a further 80 coins, some of them with caching names. I've actually got my own coin which has Atta Cache written on it, and some were done blank so that if they wanted to convert them into something else, they could have a number engraved on the panel at a later date.
Right.
I don't know if any have been used as swaggies yet, but certainly there were a few people that were considering using them that way.
Yeah. Now, I noticed that after they were released, which was sort of around about late or mid last year from memory, a number appeared on eBay and was sold, and that upset quite a few people. What are your thoughts about people collecting and selling GeoCoins?
Well, the way I look at it, I insisted that I only sold coins to Australians. Now, I myself swapped a couple of coins with overseas collectors, but these were people that I knew were collecting for the fact of collecting. They were never going to release them to the wild. Obviously, a few coins went to people that were more interested in making a quick dollar. And I believe the first coin to hit eBay sold for approximately $45 Australian, which is not bad considering they only paid $7.50 for it. There was quite a profit to be made there.
What do you think is the allure of the GeoCoin? I mean, because essentially they are a travel bug, yet they seem to have their own category.
They are different to travel bugs. Probably the biggest thing is the travel bug is all the same. What you attach to it is what's different. Whereas the GeoCoins, the time and effort that people put into creating designs, actually getting the coins minted, there's a lot of effort goes into making unique coins. There are certainly some very basic coins out there, but the majority that I've seen, it's just a pleasure to find a coin that you've never seen before and appreciate the design and the amount of effort that's gone in behind actually getting that coin out to the wild. So for me, that's what it's all about. I don't keep GeoCoins. I don't have a collection of GeoCoins myself. Every coin that I have traded for somebody else's coin, I've immediately activated it and released it to the wild so that other people can enjoy it as well. That I don't see the point in actually keeping a collection of coins in a book. That's what your icons are for.
Oh, and I was going to ask one final question related to that is, do you actively go out and find caches or caches that you've already discovered just to have a look at that geocoin, that new one that's appeared in your area?
I certainly have done in the past, yes, and I probably will again in the future. The allure of picking up a coin so that I can either, for one, move it on its journey, or to collect its icon is something that, yes, I do actually do.
Mm. Well, look, on behalf of everyone from GeoTalk, thanks for giving us a bit of background there about GeoCoins, and good luck in the future.
Thank you very much, and it's always a pleasure.
If you've been an avid listener of GeoTalk over the last couple of months, you'll know that I've been in the process of trying to put together what's called a podcache. Now, this was started in the United States by Sunny and Sandy, who put together Podcacher, and they came up with the idea that they would take you to a point using your GPS, and then you would listen to an MP3 file. And as you listen to the MP3 file, you would be guided towards to where the cache is hidden. Now, it seems that in the past few weeks, a number of groundspeak approvers or geocaching approvers have decided that they're not going to allow them to occur. And the reason being, they've stated, is that it requires specialised equipment, and that they're, because of that, some people might not be able to do the cache. Now, there's been a lot of debate and discussion about it in both the geocaching forums and the podcacher forums about this. And I thought about what I was planning to do at Sydney Olympic Park. And rather than ditch the whole idea or trying to get into a conflict with the local approvers here in Australia, I've changed the cache so that it's a multi-cache, so that you can do it without the commentary. And I'm just in the process now of finishing the commentary off, and you can listen to that as you walk along. So I thought I'd give you a little bit of a preview by putting three events that are part of the commentary, and they're three sporting events that have occurred at Sydney Olympic Park. And this is the challenge for you this week. It's to try and guess what are the three sporting events. And I'll give you the answer right at the very end of the show. So see how you go. Here's the first one.
Lorraine Graham comes out after her. Catherine Murray there as well. 50 to go. Here's her date with destiny. This wonderful young woman surges away. She's going to win a gold. It's 100 gold to Australia and a gold medal to Cathy Freeman.
There's 35 seconds to go. This is the one. It's coming back for Johnny Wilkinson. He drops for World Cup glory.
Yes!
It's up. It's over. Yes! He's done it. Johnny Wilkinson is England's hero.
Here's Aloisi for a place in the World Cup.
For us.
He's yeah! Australia have got it!
John
Aloisi, the Confederations
Come on,
Cup hero, has done
Go
it
the boys.
In the biggest game of all.
Come on, Australia!
And now it's time to check out the GeoTalk mailbag. First of all, I got an email from Amy. I don't quite know what a geocaching name is, but she does hang out with Stealth Ninja Penguin from South Australia. And they both asked if we could cover some topics. One in particular is wheelchair geocaching. Now, I don't know anyone who does wheelchair geocaching, so I'm really keen to hear from anyone who does. And in particular, we can find out how they find geocaching, how do they find the caches, and in particular, what do they think of some of the descriptions, particularly those that claim to be wheelchair friendly. So hopefully we might hear about that in the near future. They also asked if we can do some interviews with newbies, people who are new to geocaching. And it just turns out that I'll be meeting up with some in the next few weeks, so you'll hear those interviews fairly soon. Regainer pointed out that there was probably a little bit of a technicality in the GeoTalk quiz question that I asked last episode, and he was right. The question that I asked was who had found the most number of geocaches in 2006 in each state. Now, in one way that's correct, and in another it's not quite right. The stats that I based the answer on was actually the number of geocaches that had been found in each state by a particular geocacher. So that is different to the number of geocaches that have been found by a particular geocacher from each state. Now, let me give you an example. Dax Emu Mob, for example, from Victoria, That group found 1,503 geocaches in 2006, but only a third of them, 513, they found in their home state of Victoria. So when you compare that with Alan C., who found 789 caches in Victoria, you can see where the difference in the stats are. The other glaring example was Hawmore Fords. I hope I pronounced that one correctly. They found 1,042 geocaches throughout 2006, but only 731 of those were in Queensland. So that's why they're a little bit lower than IF, who found about 800, I think, from memory. So after all of that, I suppose the one thing that I'll say is it's not about the numbers. Thanks to Court at Work, who gave me a bit of a hand in trying to decipher all of that. MTrax also asked about interviews with international geocachers and about geocachers overseas. Thanks for asking that question. I'm actually going to the South Island of New Zealand next month, and if anyone's in that area around the Christchurch area or along the West Coast, please give us a yell, and love to catch up with you and have a chat, and also maybe give you a bit of audio about how I go finding geocachers in the South Island. And if there's anyone in the South Pacific or Southeast Asian region who listens and they want to get on GeoTalk, just drop us an email at geotalk@mac.com. And finally, the answers to this episode's challenge. Now, you probably would have worked out that they're all actually from the same venue, which is Telstra Stadium, the large stadium in the middle of Sydney Olympic Park. In order, they were Cathy Freeman winning the 400-metre sprint at the 2000 Olympics, Johnny Wilkinson kicking the winning field goal for England in the 2003 World Cup, and John Aloisi scoring a penalty goal to help the Socceroos beat Uruguay and get Australia into the 2006 FIFA World Cup. Well, that's all we've got now for GeoTalk in this particular episode. I hope you enjoyed it. If you've got any comments or feedback or questions, suggestions, please drop an email to geotalk@mac.com. Or check out the website at www.geotalk.libsyn.com. Also, drop a comment on the iTunes store so that you can help push us up the rankings. And I'll also give you a link to a dig section on the dig.com website. Well, that's all for now. Hope you enjoy your next 2 weeks and safe geocaching.